Welcome to our special coverage of Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi's annual press conference. It takes place on the sidelines of China's two sessions and comes amid significant geopolitical turmoil. You're looking at live pictures from the venue in Beijing, where Mr. Wang Yi will shortly be speaking from. The foreign minister is expected to address the media and answer questions on a wide range of issues. These include the Russia-Ukraine conflict, Taiwan, U.S. President Donald Trump's erratic tariffs, as well as maritime tensions in the South China Sea.
Chinese and foreign media, good morning. Welcome to this press conference for the fourth session of the 14th National People's Congress. Our topic today is China's foreign policy and diplomatic relations. We're delighted to have with us Mr. Wang Yi, member of the Political Bureau of the CPC Central Committee and Minister of Foreign Affairs, who will be taking your questions. Thank you. Friends from the media, good morning. I'm very pleased to meet you again. Today is the International Women's Day. Let me start by extending warm greetings to all women on this special day. I also want to take this opportunity to express sincere appreciation to friends from the media and people from various sectors of society for your interest in and support for China's diplomacy. In today's world, changes unseen in a century are unfolding at a faster pace. Transformation and turbulence are intertwined, and wars and conflicts keep flaring up. In today's China, we are forging ahead at full speed in building a great country. Our national rejuvenation is unstoppable, and our country's international influence is rising steadily. Under the strong leadership of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China, with Comrade Xi Jinping at its core, focusing on the central tasks of the party and the country, and following the guidance of Xi Jinping's thought on diplomacy, China's diplomacy firmly safeguards state sovereignty, security, and development interests, firmly upholds international rule of law and fairness and justice, firmly opposes all unilateral acts, power politics, and bullying, firmly observes and fulfills our international obligations, and firmly stands on the right side of history. As the world's most important force for peace, for stability, and for justice, we have full confidence in the future of humanity. We stand ready to work with all like-minded countries to pursue the noble goal of building a community with a shared future for humanity and write new chapters of peace, development, and win-win cooperation for our times. With that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Open to questions.
First question. 您能否再具体介绍一下过去一年元首外交取得了哪些重要的成果？同时呢，我们也注意到2026年开年以来，习近平主席以多种形式同多国领导人保持着密切的沟通，所以也很关心在新的一年当中，中国的元首外交还会有哪些新的看点、新的重点？谢谢。
China Central Television, 2025 has been a most extraordinary year in China's diplomacy. Could you walk us through what was achieved in the decisive head of state diplomacy in the past year? We've seen that since 2026, President Xi Jinping has been maintaining close communication with leaders of many countries. So what highlights can we expect this year?
Head of state diplomacy is the anchor of China's diplomacy. Navigating the international landscape over the past year, President Xi Jinping charted a course through rough waters with extensive head of state diplomacy, which was captured in a number of historic moments. President Xi had important meetings and carried out strategic communication with world leaders over the past year, pioneering new practices of dialogue and coordination between major countries. He visited Southeast Asia, Russia, Central Asia, and the Republic of Korea, building up the new momentum of good neighborliness and friendship. He hosted the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit in Tianjin and the China CELAC Forum, gathering new impetus for the great unity of the Global South. He attended a series of commemorations of the 80th anniversary of the victory of the Chinese People's War of Resistance against Japanese aggression and the World Anti-Fascist War, sounding a new, powerful call for safeguarding peace and justice. Through head of state diplomacy over the past year, the international community has had a better understanding of, has been drawn closer to, and has had greater trust in and higher expectation of China. More and more countries have come to see that under the guidance and the stewardship of President Xi, China's diplomacy provides the most needed stability and certainty to a world in turmoil and serves as an irreplaceable mainstay amid global turbulence. In particular, the series of important initiatives and propositions put forward by President Xi demonstrate exceptional strategic foresight and broad global vision. They point out the right way forward for the changes in the world unseen in the century. In 2026, President Xi will receive guests from around the world, host major diplomatic events such as the APEC Economic Leaders Meeting and the second China Arab States Summit, and make several important visits abroad. These diplomatic engagements are bound to further advance China's relations with the world in a positive direction, open up new space for building a community with a shared future for humanity, and enable the Chinese nation to make new, greater contributions to world peace and development. Thank you.
Sputnik News Agency. China has stated on many occasions its opposition to the deliberate infringement on a country's sovereignty and security. Given the complex international situation, how will China and Russia, two major countries, counter the attempts to reshape international law and global trade rules?
This year marks the 30th anniversary of the China-Russia Strategic Partnership of Coordination and the 25th anniversary of the China-Russia Treaty of Good Neighborliness and Friendly Cooperation. In a fluid and turbulent world, China-Russia relationship has stood rock solid against all odds. How is that achieved? I think the main reason is that the China-Russia Strategic Partnership of Coordination has been based on equality, respect, and mutual benefit since day one. It embodies the essence of a new type of international relations and represents the direction of a new type of major country relations. China and Russia are strategically independent. We always respect each other's core interests, do not impose the agenda of one on the other, and keep to the principle of non-alliance, non-confrontation, and not targeting any third party. China and Russia share a high degree of political mutual trust. Working back to back lies at the heart of this relationship. And the strong strategic resilience enables it to defy any external instigation or pressure. China and Russia act in close coordination. In major international and regional affairs, China and Russia share the broadest strategic consensus and closest strategic coordination, including defending international rules and order that you asked about. Through 80 years of wind and rain, the post-World War II international order has once again come to a critical juncture. Last year, the heads of state of China and Russia attended the commemorations of the victory of the anti-fascist war in each other's countries. And the two sides issued three important joint statements on deepening comprehensive strategic coordination, cementing global strategic stability, and upholding the authority of international law. This has sent a clear message to the world about resolutely upholding the correct view of history on World War II, safeguarding the fruits of the victory of the war, and opposing unilateral bullying acts. 80 years ago, China and Russia together contributed to the building of the post-war order. Today, 80 years on, China and Russia together will add momentum to the advent of a multipolar world. Thank you.
谢谢，请大家继续提问。请南区第二排第二位女士，谢谢。
谢谢主持人，我是深圳卫视执新闻的记者。中方宣布今年11月将在深圳举行亚太经合组织第33次领导人非正式会议，想请问王外长，您期待今年会议将达成哪些重要成果？您如何看待 APEC 对推动亚太合作的作用呢？谢谢。
深圳 Satellite TV。 China has announced that the APEC Economic Leaders Meeting will be held in Shenzhen in November this year. What important outcomes will the meeting deliver, and how do you see the role of APEC in promoting Asia-Pacific cooperation?
This is a very timely question. This year is the APEC China year. We will host APEC for the third time. From Shanghai in 2001 and Beijing in 2014, to Shenzhen this year. APEC in the past 25 years has experienced ups and downs in regional cooperation and witnessed China's unwavering commitment to growing together with the Asia-Pacific. To be a good host, China will focus on one central objective throughout the whole year. That is, to translate the goal of building an Asia-Pacific community into action and turn its blueprint into reality. Decades have passed since the concept of Asia-Pacific community was first put forward. The idea must not stay on paper or remain just a vision. We hope to find an answer in Shenzhen, an answer that delivers broad consensus, clear priorities, and workable steps, so that people in the region can associate with and get into action in building an Asia-Pacific community. Through intensive communication with all parties, we have decided on this year's APEC theme, that is, building an Asia-Pacific community to prosper together. APEC Shenzhen will focus on the three priorities of openness, innovation, and cooperation, and once again, chart the course and rally strength for Asia-Pacific cooperation at the crossroads. We will construct the main pillars of an Asia-Pacific community, align different pathways toward the free trade area of the Asia-Pacific, make appropriate arrangements for regional connectivity, and vigorously promote the transformation toward digital, smart, and green development. Throughout the year, the Chinese side will host over 300 events in cities across the country, with the participation of multiple Chinese provinces and municipalities. All APEC member economies will have the opportunity to contribute. Shenzhen is an important window on China's reform and opening up, a brilliant showcase of socialism with Chinese characteristics, and a frontier of innovation in the Guangdong, Hong Kong, Macau, Greater Bay Area. We stand ready to work with all sides to promote a restart from APEC Shenzhen toward the goal of an Asia-Pacific community. Thank you.
请大家继续提问。 请中区第三排第二位女士，谢谢。
谢谢，我是凤凰卫视凤凰网凤凰秀的记者。我们注意到近期呢，美国和以色列再次对伊朗发起军事打击，那目前冲突已经蔓延到整个的中东地区，想请问中方如何看待当前的伊朗局势，对于解决伊朗问题有什么主张？谢谢。
Phoenix TV. The US and Israel have again launched military strikes on Iran, and the conflict is spreading to the entire Middle East region. What is China's view on the Iran situation, and what solution does China propose?
This is an issue that everyone is concerned about. It is also the focal point in the current international situation. China's attitude is objective and impartial. We have stated our principled position on multiple occasions, which can be summarized into one key message, that is, to bring about ceasefire and end hostilities. Ancient Chinese wisdom warns that weapons are ominous tools and should not be used without discretion.Seeing the Middle East engulfed in flames, I want to say that this is a war that should not have happened. It is a war that does no one any good. The history of the Middle East tells the world time and again that force provides no solution. An armed conflict will only increase hatred and breed new crises.Once again, China calls for an immediate stop to military operations to avoid the spiraling escalation of the situation and prevent the conflict from spilling over and spreading. China is of the view that to find the right and proper solution to the issues relating to Iran and the Middle East, the following fundamental principles must be observed. First, respecting state sovereignty.Sovereignty is the cornerstone of the current international order. We believe that the sovereignty, security, and territorial integrity of Iran and all countries in the Gulf region should be respected and must not be violated. Second, rejecting the abuse of force. Might does not make right. The law of the jungle must not return and rule the world. Willful use of force does not prove one's strength. Civilians are innocent and should not be victimized. Third, non-interference in internal affairs. The people in the Middle East are the true master of the region. Middle Eastern affairs should be determined by regional countries independently. Plotting color revolution or seeking regime change will find no popular support. Fourth, promoting political settlement of hotspot issues. China always believes that peace is the most precious. All sides should return to the negotiating table as quickly as possible, resolve differences through equal dialogue, and make efforts for realizing common security.Fifth, major countries should play a constructive role and use their strength in goodwill. Another ancient Chinese adage reads, when benevolence and justice are not practiced, the position of strength shifts. Major countries should act in the spirit of justice and righteousness and contribute more positive energy to peace and development of the Middle East.As a sincere friend and strategic partner, China stands ready to work with Middle Eastern countries to implement the Global Security Initiative and restore order to the Middle East, restore tranquility to the people, and restore peace to the world. Thank you.
请大家继续提问。南区第一排这位女士。
谢谢主持人，我是新加坡亚洲新闻台 CNA 记者。China proposed the Global Governance Initiative last year, alongside its participation in mechanisms such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and BRICS. Some observers interpret this as China signaling a desire to play a bigger role in global governance and see this as a direct response to Western-led policies and frameworks.How would you, Mr. Wang Yi, respond to that interpretation? And how does China address views that intensifying major power rivalries, including between China and the U.S., could further deepen global divisions? Thank you.
亚洲新闻台，
去年中国提出了全球治理倡议，一些观察人士认为中国提出该倡议以及参与上合组织、金砖国家等机制，表明中方希望在全球治理中发挥更大作用，直面西方主导的政策和机制。您对此有何回应？有观点认为，包括中美在内的大国竞争加剧，可能进一步加深全球分歧，您对此怎么看？
Well, I will share with you in details the GGI proposed by President Xi Jinping. In today's world, challenges of a global nature keep emerging. The governance deficit becomes more prominent, and multilateralism is under severe shock. The Global Governance Initiative, GGI, put forward by President Xi Jinping could not be more timely and was quickly echoed by over 150 countries and international organizations. The UN Secretary General commented on the spot that the core concepts of the GGI align closely with the values upheld by the UN. China then initiated the Group of Friends of Global Governance, which was launched successively at the UN headquarters in New York and its office in Geneva. Many countries, especially Global South countries, joined the group with great enthusiasm. Why is the GGI able to draw such widespread response? I believe the key lies in the five major principles advocated by the GGI, namely sovereign equality, international rule of law, multilateralism, a people-centered approach, and real actions. They meet the common expectations of the international community and reflect the shared aspirations of people from all countries. The most explicit message of the GGI is that the leading status of the UN must be upheld, not challenged. The central role of the UN must be strengthened, not weakened. The UN is not perfect, but without the UN, the world would only be worse. Creating parallel structures outside the UN, or worse still, putting together various exclusive blocs and circles, is unpopular and unsustainable. The most unequivocal requirement of the GGI is that the UN must keep pace with the times, improve its governance system through reform, and adapt to the evolving international situation and the changing dynamics in the global balance of power in the 21st century. In particular, it should increase the voice and representation of countries of the Global South and better reflect the legitimate demands of developing countries. The goal is to build a more just and equitable global governance system. China is a founding member of the UN and a staunch defender of its cause. As the largest developing country, China is more conscious of the ardent expectations of Global South countries. Both the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the BRICS, which China took part in building, take abiding by the UN Charter as their primary guideline. And both are exploring and accumulating useful experience for reforming and improving global governance. China calls on more countries to participate in and support the GGI and work together to revitalize the UN, defend the UN, and make the UN stronger. Thank you.
继续提问，请北区第三排第一位男士。
Thank you, with CNN. Mr. Foreign Minister, as you know, since Donald Trump's return to the White House, U.S.-China relations have been tumultuous, so his planned visit to Beijing later this month has been highly anticipated. Given this, how will the ongoing U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran affect this trip? And also, ahead of this trip, he seems to be pursuing a détente with China. Notably, he did not mention China directly even once in his latest State of the Union address. So there are concerns in Washington that he might make concessions to China on issues such as Taiwan during the visit because of his focus on reaching trade and commercial deals. How would you respond to this view, and what does China want out of this visit, and what are your expectations of bilateral ties after the visit? 所以王外长您好，我是美国有线电视新闻网的记者。你也知道，特朗普总统重返白宫之后呢，美中两国关系是跌宕起伏，所以他本月底的访华是引起了全球的高度关注。那么现在美国和以色列联手对伊朗发起军事打击，这个会给他这次访华带来什么影响或变数吗？那么与此同时，在他访华前夕，他似乎寻求保持两国关系的一种缓和状态，包括在最新的国情咨文中是罕见的对中国是几乎只字未提。所以华盛顿就有人担心他在访华期间会不会因为致力于要与中方达成经贸商业方面的协议，在其他问题上包括台湾问题上对中方做出让步。所以您对此有何回应？那么中方对他的这次访华以及接下来两国关系的走向有什么判断和期望呢？谢谢。
你把我们翻译的工作都替代了。
You have now interpreter's work. And that's a long question. So that's a well thought out one. And I would like to say that we should have an answer on China-US relations because it is one of far-reaching and global implications. Turning our backs on each other would only lead to mutual misperception and miscalculation. Sliding into conflict or confrontation could drag the whole world down. China and the US are both big countries. Neither side can remodel the other, but we can choose how we want to engage. That is, to commit to a spirit of mutual respect, to hold the bottom line of peaceful coexistence, and to strive for the prospect of win-win cooperation. That's what serves the interests of Chinese and American peoples, and that's also the expectation of the international community. It is heartening to see that the presidents of the two countries have led by example. By maintaining good interactions at the top level, they have provided important strategic safeguard for the China-US relationship to improve and move forward. And they have brought the relationship back on an even keel after the ups and downs. This year is indeed a big year for China-US relations. The agenda of high-level exchanges is already on the table. What the two sides need to do now is to make thorough preparations accordingly, create a suitable environment, manage the risks that do exist, and remove unnecessary disruptions. China is always committed and open. It is critical that the U.S. work in the same direction. I believe that when the two sides treat each other with sincerity and good faith, we will be able to lengthen the list of cooperation and shorten the list of problems. We will be able to, under the strategic guidance of the two presidents, produce results satisfactory to both peoples, achieve consensus welcomed by the whole world, and make 2026 a landmark year of sound, steady, and sustainable development of China-US relations. Thank you.
请继续提问。请南区第二排这位巴基斯坦的记者提。
I represent Associated Press of Pakistan. China's neighborhood has not been tranquil last year as several countries experienced change of government and tension and dispute between regional countries were on the rise.How does China view the situation in the region, and what does China expect to achieve this year in its neighborhood diplomacy? Thank you.
巴基斯坦联合通讯社，我们注意到去年中国周边环境并不太平，多国政局出现变化，地区国家间矛盾争端有所增多。中方如何看待周边形势？对今年周边外交有何展望？
Neighbors helping neighbors and building an amicable neighborhood is part of Chinese tradition and culture. China always places the neighboring region in a priority position of its diplomatic agenda. President Xi Jinping has put forth the principle of amity, sincerity, mutual benefit, and inclusiveness for China's neighborhood diplomacy in a new era. Last year, the CPC Central Committee held the first conference on work related to neighboring countries, which set the goal of building a community with a shared future with neighboring countries. This shows that our understanding of and commitment to the neighboring region are deepening, and this is also welcomed and supported by the neighboring countries, including Pakistan. The world is entering a period of turbulence, but Asia has managed to maintain overall stability and rapid growth, contributing over 60% of global growth in the past year. This is no easy feat, but a result of the collective efforts of China and the neighboring countries. Surely, there are often political changes within countries in the region, and complex, sensitive issues left from history still exist between countries. But the underlying character of good neighborliness and friendship remains unchanged, and the prevailing trend of win-win cooperation remains unchanged. A key factor underpinning peace and stability in the region is China's steadfast commitment to the policy on fostering an amicable, secure, and prosperous neighborhood, to the principle of amity, sincerity, mutual benefit, and inclusiveness, to the vision of shared future for humanity, and to open regionalism and true multilateralism. Imagine this: should China act like some traditional powers bent on carving out spheres of influence, provoking camp-based rivalry, and even adopting a bigger-than-neighbor approach, would Asia still be as stable as it is today? Would the international community still be able to benefit from the development opportunities of Asia? Facts show that China is always an anchor for regional security, an engine for development and prosperity, and a champion of the shared values of Asian countries. We are happy and proud to play this role, and we stand ready to step up such efforts in the future. Thank you.
谢谢，请提下一个问题。 请北区第五排第一位女士，谢谢。是的。谢谢主持人，外长您好，中国新闻社、中国新闻网记者提问。 随着越来越多中国企业和公民走出去，中国的海外利益日益拓展，外交为民的责任也更重了。外长能否介绍外交部将如何更好保护海外中国公民和企业的合法权益？谢谢。
China News Service. As more Chinese enterprises go global and more citizens travel abroad, Chinese interests overseas are growing, which means greater responsibility of serving the people through diplomacy. How will the Foreign Ministry better protect the legitimate rights and interests of Chinese people and businesses overseas?
Serving the people is the abiding mission of the diplomatic work of the People's Republic of China. And strengthening the system of safety protection for Chinese nationals and interests overseas is the unremitting pursuit of the Chinese Foreign Service in a new era. A few figures for you. In the past year, we dealt with more than 100 major emergencies involving Chinese nationals and institutions overseas. We processed over 79,000 cases in which consular protection and assistance are needed. We handled over 600,000 phone calls via the 12308 consular hotline. We issued over 3,000 overseas security alerts. We secured the release of more than 50 Chinese compatriots kidnapped in Africa. And we worked with neighboring countries to crack down on online gambling and telecom fraud, bringing back tens of thousands of individuals. In the past year, we firmly protected the legitimate and lawful rights and interests of Chinese companies abroad, and we urged governments of host countries to protect the safety of Chinese personnel and projects. At the same time, we resolutely countered unwarranted suppression targeting Chinese companies and helped them strengthen risk preparedness and the ability to defend their interests through legal means. Our diplomats are posted everywhere in the globe, and they have a strong sense of mission. Some of them are stationed for years in regions affected by conflicts and turmoil. Some are exposed to a high risk of diseases every day. And some even work and live in modified shipping containers or at high altitudes with severely thin air. But they fulfill their duties with no complaint or regret. As we speak, our embassies and consulates in Iran and other Gulf states are working hard to ensure the evacuation and safety of Chinese nationals. Let me put it this way. Where there is the Chinese flag flying, there are Chinese diplomats on duty. Where there is want or need from Chinese compatriots, there is heartwarming care of the party and the government. I want to say this to all fellow Chinese abroad. While you may be facing a world of chaos and turbulence, you have behind you a motherland as firm as a rock. We will, as always, put our people first, further strengthen overseas security protection capabilities, and build a security risk prevention system that covers the entire globe. Thank you.
请南区第三排第二位女士，谢谢。谢谢外长您好，中国日报记者提问。我的问题关于全球南方，在国际秩序遭遇危机之际，全球南方国家面临严峻挑战。您如何看待全球南方国家在全球治理改革体系中的隐隐作用？同时，我们也看到今年以来国际形势出现了重大变化，单边主义和强权法则抬头，请问如何才能实现中方一直所倡导的全球南方的团结自强？ 谢谢。
China Daily. With crisis in the international order, the global south faces severe challenges. How do you see the leading role of global south countries in the reform of the global governance system? And in a year marked by major transformation in the international landscape, the rise of unilateralism and the law of the strongest, how can the global south realize the strength through unity that China has been promoting?
The collective rise of the global south is the distinct hallmark of the great transformation unfolding in the world. Over the past 40 years, its share of global economy has grown from 24% to over 40%. It has become a key driver of multipolarity in the world. Right now, hegemonism and power politics are asserting themselves and dealing a heavy blow to the international order. The Global South countries should increase communication and coordination, jointly defend our legitimate rights and interests, and work together to expand the space for independent development. The Global South is an emerging positive force for good on the international stage. In a changing and more turbulent world, we should forge greater confidence and unity, pull together, and jointly champion peace, development, cooperation, and women outcomes. We should make good use of important platforms such as the BRICS, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and the Group of 77 and China to speak up for peace and empower development. Multilateralism is vital for global South countries. We should encourage the international community to practice true multilateralism and uphold the UN-centered international system and the international order based on international law. We must always ensure that world affairs are discussed and handled by all nations and international rules formulated by all countries. The Global South needs an open and cooperative international environment for development. We should advocate a universally beneficial and inclusive economic globalization, foster an open world economy, firmly uphold the multilateral trading system, and promote openness to share opportunities and achieve win-win outcomes. China's heart is with the Global South. China's root is in the Global South. We are ready to join hands with other Global South countries to journey on toward modernization and advance the building of a community with a shared future for humanity.
中区第二排这位穿黄色衣服的女士。
Good morning, Efe from Spain. Mr. Minister, the return of Trump has forced Europe to reassess its reluctance towards China, and during the last few months, several European leaders have visited Beijing. So what mistakes and what positive steps does China believe Europe is making in this rapprochement? And does China see this as a sign of a greater strategic autonomy from Europe? Thank you.
埃菲社，特朗普回归迫使欧洲重新审视此前对华消极的立场。近几个月，多位欧洲领导人访华。中方认为欧方在改善对华关系的过程中采取了哪些积极举措，有哪些举动是错误的？中方是否将欧方接连访华视为欧洲增强战略自主的表现？
其实我们看到去年以来
Indeed, since last year, relations between China and European countries have been regaining strength. Two-way trade topped $1 trillion. Over 2 million European tourists traveled here under visa-free policies. And on top of that, European leaders paid a number of visits. Interactions are getting closer. A host of new cooperation agreements have been reached. Facts have shown that China-Europe relations draw stability from shared interests and certainty from mutually beneficial partnerships. China has a clear stance on developing relations with Europe. We consistently believe that Europe should naturally be a pole in the multipolar world, that Europe is an important force underpinning the stability of the international order, and that Europe is a key partner for China in our modernization. For China-Europe relations to stay steady and sound, it is crucial for Europe to have a correct perception of China. We are witnessing a growing consensus among wise minds in Europe that China is not a competitor, but a global partner. This is especially true among young people. They are looking at China in a more objective and positive way. In trade and economic ties, China and Europe are mutually complementary. A dynamic balance is entirely within reach amid growing ties, as testified by the facts in China-Europe cooperation. Interdependence is not a risk. Intertwined interests are not threats. And openness and cooperation will not weaken economic security. But building walls and barriers will only lead to self-isolation. We're glad to see European friends stepping out of the small attic of protectionism and walking into the fitness club of the Chinese market to build their strength and competitiveness. Thank you.
请中区第四排第二位女士，谢谢。
谢谢主持人。外长您好，总台 CGTN 记者提问。众所周知呢，当前巴以冲突严荡，同时呢，我们也看到加沙的停火脆弱。美国提出来建设所谓和平委员会，来解决加沙问题，还有战后的安排，想请教您， 中国如何推动巴勒斯坦问题的真正解决。谢谢您。
CGTN, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict has not come to an end, and the ceasefire in Gaza is fragile. The U.S. has created a board of peace to deal with the Gaza issue and post-war arrangements. How will China promote the true resolution of the Palestinian question?
The situation in Gaza tests the very foundation of international justice. The international efforts that enabled the ceasefire are welcome, but hard work still lies ahead to consolidate the ceasefire, advance reconstruction, and find a comprehensive and lasting solution to the question of Palestine. There is only one equitable and widely recognized solution to the Palestinian question, which is the two-state solution. Any other arrangements or new mechanisms must reinforce rather than undermine the two-state solution. The international community should not allow the Palestinian question to be marginalized again. The UN has a greater responsibility to play a lead role in driving the process. Turmoil and war need not be the fate of the Palestinian people. Like people elsewhere, they have a legitimate right to be free from war and to enjoy peace and development. As a responsible major country, China will continue to support Palestine's just cause of pursuing legitimate national rights and facilitate international efforts to restore justice to the Palestinian people. Thank you.
谢谢，请大家继续提问。请北区第一排第四位男士。
Thank you, NBC. Respected Minister Wang Yi, you have spoken of China-U.S. ties as most consequential relationship over time, with strategic choices that will shape world history. So, given all the happenings, would China accept the J2 format cited by some, including President Trump himself, as a framework for China and the U.S. to shoulder joint responsibility in addressing global challenges? If not, what alternative framework would you propose that will prevent confrontation with the United States and assure the world that China's rise is not aimed at overturning the existing international system. Thank you.
美国全国广播公司凌晨表示，中美关系是当今世界最重要的双边关系之一，中美两国的战略选择影响世界历史的演进方向。中方是否接受包括特朗普总统本人在内的人提出中美共治的框架，共担责任应对全球性挑战？如果不接受，中方将提出何种替代方案来避免中美对抗，并且让世界确信崛起后的中国无意推翻当前国际体系？
中国和美国当然对世界。
There is no doubt that China and the U.S. have a significant impact on the world, but we should not forget there are more than 190 countries on our planet. World history has always been written by many countries together.And the future of humanity will be forged through the collective efforts of all nations. Diversity is the inherent nature of human society. And multipolarity is what the international landscape should look like. Looking back in history, great power rivalry and bloc confrontation have invariably inflicted disaster and pain on humanity.Therefore, China will never take the beaten path of seeking hegemony as its strength grows, nor do we subscribe to the logic that the world can be run by major countries. China has inscribed in its constitution that it follows an independent foreign policy and is committed to pursuing a path of peaceful development. Chinese leaders have often declared to the world that no matter how the international situation evolves and how strong China becomes, it will never seek hegemony or expansion. As for how the international landscape should evolve, China's proposal is to build an equal and orderly multipolar world. Equal means every nation, regardless of size or strength, is an equal member of the international community and can find its place and play its role in a multipolar world. Orderly means all countries should uphold the widely recognized international rules, namely the purposes and principles of the UN Charter and the basic norms of international relations. Building an equal and orderly multipolar world should be the common responsibility of all countries, with more resources and capabilities. Major countries should be more generous, shoulder more responsibilities, and set an example of observing rules, honoring commitments, and upholding international law. China will continue to play a constructive role in reforming global governance and work with all countries toward a multipolar world. Thank you.
请大家继续提问。中区第一排这位男士。
大家好，我叫毛卢 ，with 真实巴西。Good morning, Mr. Minister. I'm Mauro from Brazil de Fato. So the national security strategy of the U.S. launched last year makes evident that the U.S. priority is to interfere in China-Latin America relations by pressuring Latin American countries trying to cut economic and other ties between the two parts. Some analysis also indicate that the U.S. is also covertly sabotaging port operations and oil trade of China in Latin America. How will China respond to this challenge that threatens the possibility of bringing to a new level the China and Latin America and the Caribbean relations as exposed in China's policy paper on Latin America and the Caribbean released last year? Thank you very much. 谢谢。
真实巴西媒体集团。美国去年发布的国家安全战略报告清楚表明，美国的优先事项是通过施压拉美国家，切断中拉经济和其他联系，来干预中拉关系。还有一些分析指出，美国正在暗中破坏中国在拉美的港口运营和石油贸易。中方去年发布中国对拉丁美洲和加勒比政策文件，提出推动中拉关系再上新台阶，而美方上述政策和做法显然对此构成挑战，中方将如何应对？
非常欢迎来自拉美。
Well, you are most welcome, friends and media from the Latin American countries.
二十一世纪的国际舞台。
Old scripts from the 19th century shouldn't be acted out on the international stage of the 21st. The resources of Latin America and the Caribbean, LAC, belong to the people there. The path of LAC countries should be chosen by their people. And the choice of friends is a decision for LAC countries alone. China-LAC cooperation is about the mutual help and support between Global South countries. Looking back, China-LAC relations grew significantly over the past 50-plus years. The key lies in the fact that China always respects Latin American people and commits to equal treatment and mutual benefit with LAC countries. We never engage in geopolitical schemes, nor interfere in other countries' internal affairs, nor ask others to pick sides. At last year's ministerial meeting of the China CELAC Forum, we jointly launched five programs for solidarity, development, civilization, peace, and people-to-people bonds, drawing a blueprint for China and LAC countries' joint march toward modernization. I would like to emphasize that cooperation between China and LAC countries does not target any third party and should not be subject to interference by any third party. We have great confidence in the future of China-LAC relations. No matter how the situation evolves, China stands ready to work with LAC countries toward building a China-LAC community with a shared future and spreading the benefits of our comprehensive cooperative partnership to more people on both sides. Thank you.
请大家继续提问。请南区第一排第四位男士，谢谢。
谢谢主持人。外长您好，新华社记者提问。十五五规划建议提出要坚持高质量发展，推动经济持续健康发展和社会全面进步。请问外交部在紧密围绕十五五规划，服务以高质量发展，推进中国现代化建设方面有哪些创新举措？谢谢。
Xinhua News Agency, the recommendations for the 15th Five-Year Plan for Economic and Social Development underline the need to pursue high-quality development and drive sustained, sound economic development and all-around social progress. What new measures will the Foreign Ministry take in connection to the 15th Five-Year Plan to contribute to the advancement of Chinese modernization through high-quality development?
The 15th Five-Year Plan offers a new blueprint for China's development and a new vision of win-win cooperation with the rest of the world. This is the first year of its implementation. China's diplomatic service will actively coordinate resources at our disposal to create a more favorable international environment for China's high-quality development and modernization. There are three priorities.First, we will continue to be an enabler of high-standard opening up. Leveraging high-level exchanges and major diplomatic events, we will continue to facilitate high-quality development of the Belt and Road Initiative, expand the network of high-standard free trade areas, keep industrial and supply chains stable and smooth, and secure a fair, open, and non-discriminatory environment for Chinese companies operating abroad.Second, we will continue to expand the fast track for people-to-people exchanges. To date, we have granted unilateral visa exemption to 50 countries and made mutual visa-free entry arrangements with 29 countries. Last year, as many as 73% of visitors came visa-free. Going forward, we will continue to refine cross-border travel policies, further leverage the benefits of visa-free entry,and upgrade support services. The goal is to both make it more convenient and comfortable for foreigners to travel and live in China, and make it safer and smoother for Chinese citizens to travel abroad. Third, we will continue to open new windows of connectivity. We will innovate and upgrade the program of Beyond the Capital Diplomatic Tour.And speed up the building of an information platform for high-quality development envisioned by the 15th Five-Year Plan. These efforts will help China's subnational entities better access global resources, share governance experience, and expand international cooperation. In this way, the diplomatic service will be able to better empower development across the country.
中区第四排，那位尼日利亚记者。
Mr. Minister, my name is Fortune Abang from the News Agency of Nigeria. This year marks the 70th anniversary of diplomatic relations between China and Africa. This year is also designated as the China-Africa Year of People-to-People Exchange. In this year of special significance, how do you expect China-Africa relations to further grow and deliver for the people of these two parties? Thank you.
尼日利亚通讯社，今年是中非开启外交关系70周年，也是中非人文交流年。在这个特殊年份，中非关系会有哪些新发展、新亮点？
欢迎非洲的朋友们提问。
My warm is welcome to you, a journalist from Africa. For 70 years.China-Africa friendship has stood the test of changing international circumstances and shown strong vitality. For 36 years, China's foreign minister has kicked off the year with a visit to Africa. This is a diplomatic tradition that has been honored rain or shine. This consistency reflects the spirit and commitment of China's diplomacy. During my visit to Ethiopia early this year, people fondly recalled the touching scenes of Premier Zhou Enlai's visit to Africa. Then in Tanzania, people still cherished the memory of Chinese assistance in building the Tazara Railway. And many young Chinese engineers and workers who laid down their lives for it and would never make it home. It's no exaggeration to say that China-Africa friendship has been passed down from generation to generation, forged heart to heart, and built with sweat and blood. In this new era, President Xi Jinping deeply values the bond with China. He emphasizes sincerity, real results, amity, and good faith in working with Africa, always reminding us of our friendship and shared interests with the continent. This approach has helped to take China-Africa cooperation to new heights. We're just 2 months into 2026, and already President Xi has sent 3 letters or messages to our African brothers and sisters, namely a letter of congratulation on the launch of the China-Africa Year of People-to-People Exchanges, a reply to veterans of Zimbabwe's liberation struggle, and a congratulatory message to the African Union Summit for the 14th year running. It's clear from these messages that China's top leader wants the torch of China-Africa friendship to be passed from generation to generation, and Africa can count on China's steadfast support for its development and revitalization. This year, China-Africa relations will see many new developments, 3 of which I'd like to draw your attention to. First, fresh steps in building the China-Africa community with a shared future. We will host multiple African leaders to strengthen mutual support as all-weather partners, and we'll write a new chapter of our shared journey together. Second, full implementation of zero tariff access to 100% of African imports as from May the 1st. As part of China's commitment to high standard opening up, we are removing tariffs completely to boost trade, to multiply benefits for the people, and to help Africa access the enormous opportunities of the Chinese market. Third, the nearly 600 exciting events to take place under the China-Africa Year of People-to-People Exchanges. We are always ready to work with our African brothers and sisters to draw inspiration from our civilizational heritages, forge a stronger bond between our people, and carry forward our friendship for many, many generations to come.
请中区第二排第二位女士，谢谢。谢谢主持人王外长您好，人民日报记者提问，请问王外长，面对逆全球化抬头，中国将如何抵制保护主义，同世界更好分享发展机遇，引领全球经济持续稳定增长？谢谢。
People's Daily. Faced with the backlash against globalization, how will China resist protectionism, better share opportunities with the world, and lead the sustained and steady growth of the world economy?
The world economy is facing headwinds, and globalization is suffering a backlash. We're seeing that a certain country is erecting tariff barriers and pushing economic and technological decoupling. This is no different from using kindling to put out a fire. You will only get burned. President Xi has reminded everybody that it's impossible to channel the vast ocean of the global economy back into isolated lakes. It just runs counter to the tide of history. Pursuing protectionism is akin to locking oneself in a dark room. It may keep out wind and rain, but it also shuts out light and air. The problems facing economic globalization can only be addressed through more sustainable development and more equitable and effective governance. To this end, President Xi has called for promoting an economic globalization that is universally beneficial and inclusive. The goal is to make the pie of economic globalization bigger and, more importantly, divide it more fairly. The principle is to leave no country behind and halt the widening wealth gap. The pathway is to encourage countries to draw on each other's strengths and share opportunities through economic openness and pursue common development and mutual success through convergent interests. China not only talks the talk, but walks the walk. Over the past 5 years, its economy has grown at an average annual rate of 5.4%, accounting for around 30% of global growth, greater than the contribution of the G7 combined. Looking ahead, China is the world's largest potential consumer market and the biggest emerging economy, underpinned by better conditions supporting a positive long-term outlook and a stronger trend of sustainable growth. China will remain the most stable engine of the global economy. A country's greatness lies in serving the greater good. China will expand high standard opening up, not only as the world's factory, but also the world's market. China is strongly committed to supporting trade and investment liberalization and facilitation, keeping global industry and supply chains stable and smooth, upholding the WTO-centered multilateral trading system, and defending a fair and open economic and trade order. The world can count on China to deliver new contributions to strong and sustainable global growth. Thank you.
继续提问。北区第二排第三位记者。
谢谢。工作室的记者提问。去年十一月，中方曾就日本首相高市早苗的涉台言论提出强烈抗议。当前中日关系面临挑战，各方面交流合作也受到影响。今年二月，高市首相赢得大选后，日本政府表示始终敞开对话窗口。请问中方对今年中日关系的发展有何期待？谢谢。
Kyoto News. Last November, China protested strongly against Japanese Prime Minister Sanae Takaichi's remarks concerning Taiwan. China-Japan relations currently face challenges affecting exchanges and cooperation in various fields. After Prime Minister Takaichi won the general election last month, the Japanese government said it remains open to dialogue. What expectations does China have for its relations with Japan this year?
The future of China-Japan relations hinges on Japan's choice. Last year marked the 80th anniversary of the victory of the Chinese people's war of resistance against Japanese aggression. In such a special year, Japan should have deeply repented of the wrong path it chose, including its brutal invasion and colonization of Taiwan. Yet, the current Japanese leader claimed that a Taiwan contingency could constitute a survival threatening situation for Japan, then under which Japan may exercise its so-called right of collective self-defense. It's well known that the right of self-defense shall be invoked only when a country has come under armed attack. One would ask, since Taiwan affairs are purely China's internal affairs, what gives Japan the right to interfere? Why is Japan entitled to invoke self-defense if anything happens in China's Taiwan region? Is exercising the right of collective self-defense simply a way to hollow out Japan's pacifist constitution, which renounces the right of belligerency? Given that Japanese militarists had used survival threatening situation as the pretext for launching aggression, such rhetoric can only make the people in China and the rest of Asia alert and deeply worried. Where exactly is Japan headed? This year also marks another significant 80th anniversary, that of the opening of the Tokyo Trials. 80 years ago, judges from 11 countries commenced proceedings that would span 2.5 years. They reviewed a mountain of irrefutable evidence and laid bare the innumerable crimes of Japanese militarists. The Tokyo Trials, a litmus test of humanity's conscience, delivered historical justice. 80 years on today, Japan is given another opportunity for serious soul-searching. As Chinese elegies remind us, history is a mirror that reflects the rise and fall of human affairs, and the past, if not forgotten, can serve as a guide for the future. We hope the Japanese people will keep their eyes wide open and never allow anyone foolish enough to tread the same disastrous path today. A strong China with 1.4 billion people will never allow anyone to justify colonialism or reverse history's verdict on aggression. Thank you.
继续提问。请南区第三排这位女士。
Good morning. Question from Antara, Indonesia National News Agency. So with the resuming of Philippines as the chairmanship in ASEAN 2026, how does China view the prospect for a more concrete consolidation or negotiation regarding a code of conduct in South China Sea with the ASEAN member countries? Thank you very much.
印尼安塔拉通讯社，菲律宾已接任2026年东盟轮值主席国，中方如何看待与东盟国家磋商达成实质性有约束力的南海行为准则的前景？
The South China Sea is home to the world's busiest, safest, and freest shipping lanes. Over the past year, cooperation in the South China Sea has kept a sound momentum. China had in-depth discussions with Indonesia on joint maritime development. China held bilateral dialogue with Malaysia on maritime issues.And carried out cooperation with Vietnam on sustainable fisheries development. Just recently, Chinese Coast Guard successfully rescued over a dozen Filipino crewmen distressed at sea. All these are ample proof that peace, cooperation, and friendship should be the new narrative of the South China Sea. Making waves wins no hearts, and fermenting trouble finds no takers.Yet lasting peace and stability requires solid institutional support. As we continue with the full and effective implementation of the Declaration on the Conduct of Parties in the South China Sea, consultation on a Code of Conduct in the South China Sea, COC, as you mentioned, has reached crunch time. All relevant parties look forward to wrapping it up this year.Together with the parties, China has the confidence and the resolve to remove interference, bridge differences, expand common ground, and reach an agreement as soon as possible. The COC will provide the golden rules for the parties to effectively manage differences, build trust, and advance cooperation.We also hope that as this year's ASEAN chair, the Philippines will recognize and fulfill its responsibility, resist the pull of self-interest, and play a positive role for peace and stability in the region. Thank you.
请大家继续提问。请中区第六排这位男士。
你好，Mr. Minister. India-China relations are now looking up and on the course of normalization. India is also set to host BRICS summit this year. And how does China view where the relations currently stand and look at their progress and their future trajectory in the current state of very volatile global situation? Thank you.
印中关系如今步入正常化轨道，今年印度担任金砖主席国，中方如何看待两国关系的现状、改善进展和未来走向？
确实，去年八月，习近平主席同
August last year, President Xi Jinping and Prime Minister Narendra Modi had a successful meeting in Tianjin. Building on the fresh start enabled by the ASEAN meeting in 2024, it brought about further improvement in China-India relations. Both sides are earnestly implementing the important understandings of our leaders. We are heartened to see re-energized interactions at all levels, a new record in bilateral trade, and closer people-to-people exchanges. All this has brought tangible benefits to the two peoples. As each other's important neighbors and members of the Global South, China and India enjoy profound civilizational ties and share extensive common interests. Mutual trust and cooperation is beneficial to the development of the two countries, while division and confrontation is detrimental to the rejuvenation of Asia. The two sides should follow the direction set by our leaders, remove interference, and advance toward the same goals. First, we must maintain the correct strategic perception of each other as partner rather than rival, an opportunity instead of threat. Second, we must uphold good neighborliness and friendship and jointly safeguard peace and stability in the border areas. Third, we must focus on development, which is the biggest common denominator of our two countries, and produce more visible outcomes of practical cooperation. Fourth, we must step up to the plate and support each other's BRICS presidency over the next 2 years. So that together we can make BRICS cooperation more substantive and bring new hope to the Global South. Thank you.
请提下一个问题。请北区第一排第二位女士，谢谢。
谢谢主持人，中评社记者提问。外长您好，我们注意到近段时间以来，赖清德当局反复的声称台湾是主权独立的国家，台湾问题不是中国内政。同时，我们也看到台湾问题和台海局势，台湾问题和台海局势不断的升温，解放军的这个台海军演也越来越靠近台湾。所以想请问外长，您如何评估在台海发生这个就是擦枪走火的这样的一个风险，以及中方是否设定了这个两岸统一的时间表和路线图？谢谢。
China Review News Agency, the Lai Ching-te authorities have been claiming that Taiwan is a sovereign independent country and that the Taiwan question is not China's internal affairs. The Taiwan question and the cross-strait situation have become more heated, and the PLA's drills are getting closer to the island.What do you make of the risk of conflict breaking out in the region? And does China have a timetable and roadmap for reunification?
Taiwan has been an integral part of China since ancient times. It never was, is not, and never will be a country. Its return to China is a victorious outcome of the Chinese people's wall of resistance against Japanese aggression and the Second World War.Its status has been definitively fixed by a series of international legal instruments, including the Cairo Declaration, the Potsdam Proclamation, Japan's Instrument of Surrender, and the Resolution 2758 of the UN General Assembly. Any attempt to create two Chinas or one China, one Taiwan is doomed to fail. The DPP authorities' obstinate pursuit of their separatist agenda is the root cause, undermining peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. It has been proven time and again that the more the international community stands against Taiwan independence and upholds the One China principle, the more assured peace and stability will be across the Taiwan Strait. The Taiwan question is China's internal affair. It is at the core of China's core interests, a red line that must not be crossed or trampled on. Taiwan was recovered by China over 80 years ago, and we will never allow any individual or force to separate it from China again. The One China principle has overwhelming support in the international community. More and more countries are standing with China, not only reaffirming their commitment to the One China principle and recognizing Taiwan as part of China, but also taking a clear stand against all activities for Taiwan independence and supporting the cause of China's reunification. This is irrefutable proof that opposing Taiwan independence and promoting China's reunification is the trend of the times and meets the expectation of the international community. Resolving the Taiwan question and realizing the complete reunification of our motherland is a historic process that cannot be stopped. Those who support it are on the right side of history, and those who defy it shall perish. In the interest of time, we will have one last question.
Global Times. The world is embroiled in more conflicts and intensifying competition and confrontation. Why has China decided to pursue the foreign policy goal of building a community with a shared future for humanity?
You're right in saying that humanity finds itself in an era fraught with challenges. Throughout history, even in the darkest times, there have always been those who never stopped chasing ideals and light. President Xi Jinping is such a pioneer. With the foresight and the compassion of a leader at the helm of a major country, President Xi answered the big question of where humanity is headed by proposing to build a community with a shared future for humanity. His message is clear. Our enemies are not each other. They are war, poverty, hunger, and injustice. We cannot defeat them by fighting alone or looking after only ourselves. Instead, we must rally the world and build a common future. Alone, one is helpless. United, we can have great strength. The truth and value of this vision are sinking in with people around the world. It is like a beacon lighting the way forward for humanity. This vision encapsulates how China sees its role in the world and in history as a major country. The Chinese have always had a noble tradition of acting for the common good and pursuing harmony for all. Our great rejuvenation as a nation and our rise as a country of 1.4 billion people will not follow the beaten track where big powers vied for supremacy and territory. On the contrary, we will take a path of peaceful development, and we encourage other countries to take the same path. Together, we can build an open, inclusive, clean, and beautiful world that enjoys lasting peace, universal security, and shared prosperity. We are encouraged by the growing support for this vision. More than 100 countries and international organizations have embraced it, and nearly 80% of people around the world are in favor. Over 40 countries and regional organizations have joined us in realizing this vision. This attests to the saying that right makes might. A righteous cause is sure to garner mighty support of world's countries and pull the strength of the people. The future of humanity is bright, but it will not dawn on its own. Building a community with a shared future for humanity is both a beautiful vision and a historic process. It requires the united efforts of many generations. China will press ahead with conviction and concrete steps and work with any and all to make it a reality. Thank you.
中外记者朋友们, 今天的记者会到此结束, 谢谢王毅外长, 谢谢大家, 再见。
The press conference now concludes.
That was Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi speaking at a news conference on the sidelines of the two sessions meetings in Beijing. Mr. Wang touched on a range of issues at the news conference, from the conflict in the Middle East to the war between Russia and Ukraine, as well as the rivalry between China and the U.S. Mr. Wang noted that in today's world, we've seen change unfolding at a much faster pace, with wars and conflicts continuously flaring up. He stressed that China's diplomacy safeguards national sovereignty and strongly objects to acts of bullying. He said China is the most important force for peace, stability, and justice, with Beijing firmly opposing all forms of unilateralism and hegemony. When asked about the war on Iran, Mr. Wang said this is a war that should not have happened, noting that it benefits no one. He reiterated calls for an immediate ceasefire to prevent a spillover of hostilities. On China and Russia, he said their relationship has stood rock solid against all odds. He pointed out that Beijing and Moscow do not fear external instigation or pressure. He painted an optimistic picture for China-U.S. relations, with President Trump set to visit Beijing soon. He noted that China and the U.S. cannot change each other, but they can change the way they engage, treating each other with sincerity and good faith. For a closer look at Foreign Minister Wang Yi's comments on the news conference, CNA's Deborah Wong joins us live now. Deborah, we know the conflict in the Middle East would feature heavily. Where does China stand on the ongoing war, and what kind of role is it seeking to play?
So Mr. Wang once again condemning the conflict in the Middle East. He called for immediate ceasefire and all for all parties to return to the negotiating table. You know, that was a huge highlight that all the foreign journalists were looking out for. In fact, it was one of the first questions that came out in the press conference. And of course, there's going to be a lot of attention on it because China is seen as a valued partner of Iran. And, you know, China's response in the last few weeks as the conflict escalated has been quite neutral. You know, it says that it's a call for all parties to maintain a ceasefire, to enact a ceasefire as well as to resume dialogue. Now, Mr. Wang also raised in the answer earlier in the press conference the importance of Middle Eastern affairs being only handled by Middle Eastern parties. He's called for all foreign parties, not to interfere in those affairs and to respect sovereignty as well. Now, this is not too different from MOFAR's and from China's stance relating to the conflict in the Middle East. So, you know, it's really not any surprise that he answered in that way.
Deborah, Mr. Wang also spoke about upholding multilateral organizations and international rule of law. What more can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. Mr. Wang actually spoke at length about the Global Governance Initiative. Now, that is something that Chinese President Xi Jinping raised last year during the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit, where leaders convened in Tianjin. And the whole point of raising that is actually a framework to work towards multilateralism, to maintain openness and to foster open communication as well as dialogue. And that was a concept that is closely aligned with the core concepts of the UN Charter. And also, it was raised to maintain a people-centered approach in a time of geopolitical instability. So Mr. Wang responded to a question by my CNA colleague, Tan Su Hui, where she asked about major power rivalries. Have a listen.
China proposed the Global Governance Initiative last year, alongside its participation in mechanisms such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and BRICS. Some observers interpret this as China signaling a desire to play a bigger role in global governance and see this as a direct response to Western-led policies and frameworks. How would you, Mr. Wang Yi, respond to that interpretation? And how does China address views that intensifying major power rivalries, including between China and the U.S., could further deepen global divisions? Thank you.
全球治理倡议发出的最清晰的信号就是联合国的主导地位必须坚持不容动摇联合国的核心作用应当加强不能削弱尽管联合国并不完美但没有联合国这个世界将更加糟糕脱离联合国另搞炉套 另起炉灶甚至拼凑各种小集团小圈子都不得人心也不可持续全球治理倡议提出的最明确的要求就是联合国需要与时俱进通过改革完善治理体系以适应21世纪国际形势的发展和 国际力量对比发生的重大的变化尤其是要增强全球南方国家的发言权和代表性更多反映广大发展中国家的正当诉求目的就是构建更加公正合理的全球治理体系
So the parallel structure that you heard there in Mr. Wang's response seems to be a veiled reference to the U.S.'s Board of Peace that Mr. Donald Trump created to try to talk through the processes, with the peace processes for Gaza peace plan. Now, about 24 countries have joined, but notably Russia and China have not signed on. Key democratic allies of the U.S., such as the U.K., Germany, Canada, they have also not signed on. And so another question really raised during the press conference was about the U.S.-China relationship, especially as Mr. Trump is expected to visit Beijing at the end of the month. We have not heard confirmation right now as to the exact dates he's going to be here, whether he will eventually be here. But of course, you know, the conversation on both sides have remained open. Mr. Wang said that following the trade war, you know, that erupted last year, both sides have maintained open dialogue. And they also talked about how mutual cooperation, mutual respect really is the way to go.
Deborah, the issue of Taiwan came up in several questions during the news conference. Was there anything that Mr. Wang said that stood out?
So the answer really was not too far from China's stance, from MOFA's stance in, you know, in dealing with the Taiwan question. But I would like to point out that in the government work report this year, Premier Li Qiang, his tone was notably a little bit stronger than previous years. He talked about how it's not just opposing external interference regarding the Taiwan question right now, but also fighting separatists. And, you know, Mr. Wang also did mention that. And the separatists in this sense, really could be a veiled reference also to Taiwan President, the DPP chief, William Lai. Now, Mr. President Xi and China leadership see Mr. Lai as a separatist. And, you know, he has made some pro-independent remarks in the past. And also with the Japan question tossed in the last couple of months, you know, Prime Minister Sane Takeuchi making some remarks about military intervention, protecting Japanese sovereignty. You know, if Beijing were to do anything to Taiwan, and so that actually created some bilateral issues between Japan and China, and we have seen tensions ratchet up in the Cross Strait in the last few months, with Beijing enacting, in fact, one of its largest military drills to date, and so the Taiwan question really was something that everyone was looking at, because in fact with the U.S. right now distracted, Taiwan is seen as quite vulnerable. But I would also like to point out that in the government report, Premier Li didn't just talk about fighting the separatists, but he also talked about both sides working together towards reunification. So we could see some policies friendly towards the Taiwanese in order to achieve that peace plan that China desires. Back to you.
Thank you, Deborah, for those updates and insights. Deborah Wong reporting live from Beijing. And for more analysis on Mr. Wang's comments, now let's speak to Wang Huiyao, founder of the Center for China and Globalization. Dr. Wang is also a former counselor to China's State Council. Dr. Wang, thank you for making the time to speak with us today. There's quite a lot to unpack from Mr. Wang's news conference. Let's start off with your initial reaction. Was there anything that Mr. Wang said that surprised you or stood out to you?
Well, I don't think there's any big surprises. And I think Minister Wang was actually, as usual, you know, gave a very clear, concise and also very straightforward news conference, as all we expected. But also, I noticed that this year's Foreign Minister News Conference a little bit ahead of schedule. Usually, in the previous years, maybe at the late part of the conference, and this is right in the middle of the conference, shows that the global situation and what's happened in the political and turmoil in the Middle East is a focus. So that was one of the first questions he was asked about, and I think. Mr. Wang, you give a very firm answer. China doesn't want to see any war happen, and that is going to devastate everybody's interests. And we should go back to the, multilateral system. And law of jungle is not another way to do. Whoever fist is bigger doesn't mean you're going to take winner takes all. So China certainly not support that. The other thing I noticed.
I'm sorry, we appear to have lost connection with Dr. Wang there. We're trying to reconnect, if you'd give us a few seconds. Dr. Wang, are you still with us? Dr. Wang there was just speaking about some of Mr. Wang's comments at the news conference on the sidelines of the Dr. Wang, can you hear me? Just want to check that you can still hear me and we're connected.
Yes, I can hear you. Yes.
Okay, sorry. We lost connection just now, but I want to continue with your comments on what Mr. Wang Yi said about the sovereignty of Iran and the Gulf nations. Those should be respected. Can we listen in to what he said about Iran and the ongoing war in the Middle East? And then we'll come back and talk about that more.
Okay.
中国古人云：“兵者，凶器，不可不慎用。”面对陷入战火的中东，我想说的是，这是一场本不应该发生的战争，也是一场对各方都没有好处的战争。中东的历史已经反复告诉世人，武力不是解决问题的办法。 兵戎相见只会增添新的仇恨，酝酿新的危机。
What do you think this says about the role that China wants to play in this conflict?
Well, I think China has been very straightforward that they do not allow any, this kind of war happening, and that he said very specifically, it's not going to buy whoever had a big fist. Then he's going to winner takes all. So, and a war is not devastating for the whole world, and for nobody's going to benefit from that. So, I think he actually mentioned China's very strong protest for this war and really ask for the respect of the sovereignty and territorial integrity.
What kind of action can we expect China to take when it comes to helping to end this conflict in the Middle East?
Well, I think there's a few things probably can be done. I think the UN has already called an urgent meeting there, and that's number one. I think number two, China is continue trade with those regions in the Middle East, all the countries there. And thirdly, I think, you know, we are going to see, you know, if the Chinese interest is seriously damaged and jeopardized, I'm sure China will not stand by for that to happen. So I think China still hopes for the peaceful solution out of this, but China didn't rule anything out for the future, you know, escalation of the event.
Help us understand, why is the Middle East so important to China? And how will this impact the steps it takes in addressing the ongoing conflict?
Well, I think Middle East is important, of course. You know, China petroleum import depends on 70% of the global import, and Iran and Saudi and Gulf country Qatar are a big supplier of China. Just Iran alone maybe accounts about 10% of China's import. So those are important. And of course, China doesn't really limit it just only to one country. Can diversify that, but that's not a, you know, not just a problem for China. It's a problem for every country. For Japan, 90% of Japan petroleum import depends on Middle East and other countries. South Korea and ASEAN and the rest of the world. So it's not really hurting China, even hurting the global energy market, and then going to drag down the global economy into a chaotic situation. We may have a recession, and we may have many things happening in employment and social unrest. So this is not just hurting China; it's hurting the whole world. I mean, Spanish Prime Minister already protest. We see, you know, many other Western countries are not happy with that. EU is not happy, probably in many countries. So this is not really just China's case, but China also strongly protests this, telling that sovereignty, territorial integrity must be respected, and this of you know, unilateral war should be stopped.
Dr. Wang, U.S.-China relations came up in several questions at the news conference. Let's listen in to what Mr. Wang said about Mr. Trump's upcoming trip to Beijing.
中方的态度始终是积极的，也是开放的，关键 是美方也要相向而行。我相信啊，只要双方以诚相待、以信相交，我们就能不断拉长合作的清单，也持续缩短问题的清单，就能在两国元首的战略引领下，取得让两国人民都满意的成果，达成国际社会
What would you say is Mr. Wang's key message to the U.S.?
Well, that message has been very clear, that we may have a different system, but if we, you know, we don't also want to change each other, particularly China, but that doesn't, you know, preventing both largest economy to get along, to get together. We should find a way to accommodate each other and work with each other. And also for Mr. Wang, you mentioned that the high-level exchange agenda is on the table already. I think that's in a direct way of saying, okay, we already have those high-level visits already. Let's really focus on what we can achieve, you know, expanding the cooperation list, cut short of the negative list. And so that's really a very great message saying there. I think, after all, given all this turmoil, given all the geopolitical crisis we're having now, U.S. and China should really talk to each other. You know, U.S. is the largest security provider to the Middle East to some extent. China is the largest economic trading partner of all the Middle East. I mean, both of them should really work together and stabilize the Middle East and the world peace in large. So I really think this, for Mr. Wang's speech, is really important and highly timely.
China-Japan relations also came up at the conference, and Mr. Wang once again questioned what gives Japan the right to interfere when it comes to the issue of Taiwan. What do you read into Mr. Wang's comments on the current state of ties between China and Japan? Do you see any chance of the two sides resolving their differences?
I do see the tune has been really for Mr. Wang. He, of course, maintained his consistent position. He was basically saying, "Look, you know, Taiwan is a domestic issue. What that got to do with your Japanese self-defense purpose? Or if Taiwan has problem, Japan are going to re-trigger its self-protection emergency act. So that really, he was really precisely said very clear about that. Asking what does he expect for the 2026? For Mr. Wang, he didn't give too much talk into that 2026 expectations. So I think that sent a message to the Japanese government. Okay, why don't Japanese also take some actions? Now the prime minister has the majority. She doesn't have to be that hawkish to win the right side support. And then can start do something to improve the relation. And I think you're also different than the well.
I apologize. We've lost connection again with Dr. Wang there. That was Dr. Wang Huiyao, founder for the Center for China and Globalization and former counselor of China's State Council. Thank you for sharing your insights with us, Dr. Wang. China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi has outlined the country's diplomatic priorities, but the focus at home is on reviving growth and improving livelihoods. Policymakers have pledged to boost jobs, lift incomes, and strengthen social safety nets under a new five-year roadmap. CNA's Crystal Cha tells us more.
It is impossible to describe for certain the typical life of the Chinese, given its a diverse population of 1.4 billion. But across the country, there are common concerns within different age groups. And ministers answered questions related to some of these topics at the annual two sessions political meeting currently underway in Beijing. Issues such as employment, social security, elder care, and health were discussed for more than 2 hours. In the elder care space, officials recognized that more and more seniors are living alone. They said that new jobs such as elder care service specialist will be made official and that a visitation and care system will be established. With China expected to have 402 million seniors by 2040, conversations around policy reforms and the sustainability of the pension system will intensify in the coming years. Earlier this week, I spoke to a 50-year-old Mr. Chen. His parents are in their 80s. This is what he has to say about retirement and pensions. Life expectancy in China has been climbing. In 2025, it stands at 79.25, and the government is looking to raise that to 80 by 2030. As the elderly population becomes larger and live longer, it is also critical that the country stays healthy, not least to manage healthcare costs. Lei Haichao, director of the National Health Commission, who's well known for his candid remarks, reminded the audience that men should keep their waistlines below 90 cm and women below 85. He even explained the need to do colonoscopies and stool tests for individuals at risk and detect tumors early.
So in here, I once again emphasize, cancer is not scary. The key is preventing, in doing early screening.
All this was information he asked reporters present to help raise awareness. It is a session for the domestic audience, but there's also something for people outside China. The tourism minister recognized that making reservations, buying tickets, and finding restrooms might still be difficult for some tourists. China recorded 150 million inbound trips in 2025, a 17% jump from the prior year, as it offered visa-free entry to passport holders from more countries. The tourism minister said China will further promote the integration of culture into travel experiences to expand tourism beyond simply a visit to scenic spots.
Crystal Chia, CNA, Beijing.
That's Asia Now for this hour. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget headlines anytime at CNA.Asia and CNA 938 Radio. Plus, we're on Facebook and YouTube.